Talk Live.
FCC, let's do it live.
That's right. We're going to do it live here on Free Talk Live.
This is not recorded, ladies and gentlemen.
No. Although, I guess technically we're the studio audience.
Yeah, it's just us right now. Just us.
Free Talk Live was filmed before a live studio audience of us.
Yeah, that's right. Just us right now.
Because we're a live call-in radio talk program where you can call in, talk about, well, whatever you like. We're going to talk about some stuff. There's an article that we have that apparently wants us to feel bad for a specific subset of government, and we'll talk about that coming up.
Oh boy!
But
I don't think we should feel bad for any of these people. Honestly, I mean they're thugs. They're tyrants. Many tyrants.
Yeah, I know they are.
They're learning how to be tyrannical beings, not beings of love.
I was talking to somebody recently who has, you know, some kids or whatever, grown, right? You know, they're older, they're in their, you know, late 50s or whatever. But they've got some kids who are, I don't know, in their 30s or something. And they were talking about how, you know, they're changing careers, right? They went into, I don't know, tech or something like that, software or something. And they decided, no, they want to make a career change. And instead, they're going into government.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I'm like, why would they want to become a micro tyrant?
I don't know. What's up with these people that want to be micro tyrants? Do they think they're serving humanity?
Job security.
Okay. I mean,
no, pure and simple. We're never going to run out of, well, so long as the world doesn't get blown up and we haven't completely eliminated the institution of government, there's always going to be a job for people who want to be micro tyrants.
Yeah. But it's funny whenever I unleash that term to somebody who's obviously never heard it. Micro tyrant, right? Because like they immediately get it, or it seemed to. Like every time I've said it to somebody, I've seen like a facial expression, like they're like, micro tyrant. That's actually a pretty good term for
it.
What
is a good
do.
Term.
And like they realize that there is some, you know, at least on the surface, some element of force involved in their job, coercion, you know, that kind of a thing. Because I mean, government doesn't really do anything. It doesn't have anything. It doesn't produce a product or a service. It just,
well, it, violence, oppression,
I mean,
these are products
it
slash
does
services,
produce services
that you will take.
It does appear to be produce services like healthcare or roads or mail.
Well, okay, but like it really doesn't do anything other than take a bunch of money from everybody else, take a hefty cut off the top and keep it all for themselves and their friends, and then, you know, subcontract the work out.
It's true.
It's
what they do.
If anything, they are inept project managers in that respect,
mm-hmm.
Right?
But Captain, mail is an essential service. We shouldn't have to pay for an essential service now, should we?
Dude, the mail can be replaced with existing companies.
Oh, they already did at one point. Lysander Spooner.
Right.
That's
famously,
right.
Famously, yeah,
that's
replaced
right.
The entire postal office. And because he was so efficient and so cheap, they made it illegal for you to ever do that.
Which is ridiculous because we should be able to do that. We should be able to compete against the post office.
They want everyone on Earth to believe that what unites them, what connects them, is government. I mean, the first thing that everyone thinks about is, well, who will build the roads, right?
Right.
Right, because that's what connects us. That's how I got here, was roads. The thing that literally physically connects my house to this studio is roads.
Yeah.
And why would they? Because they could pick anything. They could pick dentistry or flowers or anything.
Healthcare.
Well, they're working on it.
Yeah, that's true. They really are.
Right, right.
They even though it's a terrible idea, they're working
sorry,
on it.
I'm sorry, let's rephrase that. Disease subscription management.
Actually a better
subscription
model.
Disease management.
Thank
yes,
you, yes.
Yes. Now, why did they pick roads? Why is that so important to them? because they need to be the thing that literally holds society together.
Yep.
They can't allow people to realize that society can hold itself together, that human beings acting without coercion decide to be friends with each other.
I've been driving around. It's springtime now. Like, all the snow's melted. We had a, I don't know, almost 70-degree day yesterday or the day before. I'm not sure which one.
I think it may have been yesterday or the day before. I don't remember either.
So, of course, all of the divots in the roads are fresh, if you will. The potholes and the, you know, that kind of thing. The cracks and the bumps and all that kind of stuff. I'm thinking to myself, you know, if the roads were free market, there would be some roads, depending on who's quote-unquote managing the roads, who the service RSP is, your road service provider.
Mm-hmm.
But there would be roads where, like, as soon as a pothole popped up, it would get filled that day.
Mm-hmm.
That would be really cool. I would definitely pay for that kind of service.
Right. Now, I'm pretty sure that this doesn't happen at the government level on any road anywhere around the globe.
So it's actually worse than you think. So not only would there be ones that, oh, wow, you filled the pothole that day. No, there would be advances in road technology that cannot exist.
Right. Because,
look, everyone, you know how this works. They have to spend the entire budget in order to get a bigger budget next year.
Because if they don't, they get a smaller budget.
Right. And if the money were not being printed, it might be okay to have the same budget next year. But they keep printing money, so everything keeps getting more expensive. So they need a bigger budget. So what do you think they do? They make sure that none of the potholes get filled.
Right.
So that there's perpetually a need for construction workers paid by government to fill those holes.
And that's what government does when it interferes with the marketplace, is it creates problems like this. It creates more potholes instead of incentivizes filling potholes and road technology.
Right. Now, what would it be? I don't know. I'm not the market. I have one brain, not a billion brains. But who knows? It might be that there's actually some kind of metamaterial that's actually really cheap and easy to make, where it just literally flows into what was a pothole and fills it in.
Yep.
That might be technology that already exists, and we will never know.
Yeah, or how about something that reminds me of, like, the self-feeding pet dish,
right,
where you load, you know, a big old bag into a gravity fed container filled with dog food. Well, what if something like that could exist, where if a pothole crept up, it just sort of automatically oozed itself into the cracks, and no one even noticed?
Yeah.
That would be really cool.
Decades ago in school, I saw this video of, you know, back when it was a little bit hard to create fake video of this machine. Like, I watched the footage of this machine replacing asphalt. It would carve up and grind the asphalt in front of it, heat it up, and just pour it out flat out the back of it.
Right.
That existed 20 years ago. 20 years ago! This was before the internet, people!
Welcome to government, Peekless. They can't invent things.
Well, no, it's worse. It's so much worse than that.
They
have to suppress invention.
Of course they do. Yeah. They don't want any competition, dude.
Right. They can't possibly show you how easy this is to do, or else you'd realize that it doesn't need to be centrally planned.
And then you're perpetually their absolute slave. And these tyrants love it when you're their slave, because then they don't have to do as much work.
I'm reminded of the scene in V for Vendetta, where the chancellor is on the big screen and he's all, "We need to remind everyone why they need us."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
how they remind us. They disincentivize invention. They disincentivize free markets. They disincentivize free minds by indoctrinating them in their public indoctrination centers.
All right, so before we go on, it is Free Talk Live. If you are just tuning in and you've never heard our show, please visit freetalklive.com to find out what we're about. We're a live call-in radio talk program from the perspective of freedom, liberty, peace, prosperity, those types of things. Generally, a libertarian, sort of bent to it, although some of us are anarchists versus, you know, libertarians. There's,
or if you prefer the term voluntarist.
Voluntarist, definitely.
That's the term I prefer.
Because we do throw way fewer bombs than the ones we're fighting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not the freedom-minded people who started all the wars and, you know, bombed, you know, a bazillion countries since the time that I've been alive, you know, that have lied to get us into armed conflict, et cetera,
and so on.
Oh,
have you seen the new one that's happening now?
Yeah, we Riley and I are actually talking about the Iran drone bombings of Israel right now.
That's the one. All right, guys, you wanted it, you got it. World War III, this is how it starts.
Why do we have to keep doing this to ourselves? We keep cheering on these stupid wars.
I can tell you exactly why. Because people are too afraid to change. They could, at the very least, save in cryptocurrency. That would require them to learn a thing and to face something that's, oh, I'm a little scared of it. But at least you wouldn't put 100% of your value, your life's effort, into things that they control.
Right,
first
like
and foremost, first and foremost, the dollar. But anyone with any savvy knows that you can't save in dollars. They're melting ice cubes. You can't hold on to
That's
them.
That's right. They're melting ice cubes.
Right. So where do people put their money? They put it in stocks. Oh, you
this,
mean pieces
can
of
go up and down.
Right.
But
pieces of
maybe
corporations.
Make you money.
Corporations are and always will be parts of the government, by definition.
Yeah, they are legal fiction.
Right. That's what a corporation is. So people buy pieces of these things that are the government.
Yeah.
Okay, some of them will put it in land. Oh, you mean deeds issued by the government?
By the criminal gang known as government? Yeah. By the tyrants, despots, and thieves, the parasite class?
Right. Right. The bonds, either the ones initiated by these nightmarish monsters that are currently threatening the existence of multicellular life, or the ones that are issued by the corporations that are just parts of the same organization.
Yeah. And to that extent, government itself, at least the United States government, is also a corporation.
Yeah.
Because it grants itself protections that no other organization or persons get.
It is to a corporation what a corporation is to a human being.
Yes.
Like the levels of immunities and powers, like never dying, never needing to eat, existing in multiple places at once. It's like that, but a step up. Because when it steals, people cheer. When it kills, people cheer.
Now,
when it poisons you, the people go along with it.
They demand it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They demand that everyone else gets the poison, too.
Now, I've encountered people who, when you talk about, the abolishment of government or what does, the world or even some subsection of the world look like without the institution of violence known as government. And one of the reactions that I've gotten a number of times is, but the corporations will just take over. And it's like, well, okay, so first of all,
they did.
they're already here.
Like first.
Yeah, you're afraid of what already happened. second of all, if government is successfully abolished, then corporations technically don't exist.
Right.
Right. So now you're going to have...
You have to make them double back and they go, okay, well, I guess what I mean to say is that companies will just become violent and take over.
Yeah, I don't think so, because they have already within their organizational structure the duty to provide a product or service to their shareholders, if you will. Now, in a free market, that is a market absent government, will large organizations exist?
Yes,
of course they will. However, they'll now be free to organize in any way they want to. They don't have to necessarily subscribe to the legal fiction that is corporatism as laid out by government. So that is to say, like right now, I'm trying to think of one. There's a bunch of like nonprofit organizations that have to be corporations, right? According to government, right? Or else. Right. Or else government will come after them with, men with guns and legal threats. And, oh, well, if you don't fill out these forms and pay these fees, we will put you in jail. And if you resist that, we purport the authority to end your life just because you're not organizing the way they want to.
And that's the horror of this organization that we call government. The parasite class feeds. I repeat, feeds off of the American people and the people around the world. And this is why we are here on the radio talking about the parasite class as though they are the enemy, because they are the enemy. They're not your friends, ladies and gentlemen. Don't salute their flags. Don't pay homage to their history. It's time to stop this insane system that has brought violence and death and destruction and armies that oppress to the American people and the people around the world for centuries. It's time to stop this madness.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And I'd like to point out that, like, would there be large companies? Yes and no. Well, like, there are advantages to size, but they are nothing like the advantages when size allows you to avoid taxes.
Right.
Because every time that you print your own thing instead of going to a printer, that's taxes you didn't have to pay and they didn't have to pay.
Here's something that doesn't exist commonly that I believe would exist in the absence of government. And that is people organizing to accomplish a task. And then when they're done, they go back to whatever it is they were doing earlier.
Yeah.
Right. Like, well, I don't know. Recently in the news, there's something about like a bridge collapse somewhere overseas or whatever, that kind of thing. So,
or
like,
even a bridge collapsing here on American soil in North Carolina.
Right. Yeah.
the depressing.
Actually,
truth
that was Maryland. My bad.
So like
what you're describing is literally what corporations were until the turn of the century. They were, number one, only for public goods, explicitly and exclusively. And number two, they were short term. They would come together for a single purpose, build a bridge, build a dam, something like that. Something that was, again, a public good.
Right.
And then they would disband.
Right. Can you imagine how easy it would be for like a community that like, oh, you know, the bridge is broken. Somebody, you know, volunteers some time and put up a GoFundMe to, you know, we need approximately this much money to you know, rebuild or fix the bridge. That kind of thing. So everybody put it, you know, and if you're in the community, you chuck in what you can, if you want to. It's all voluntary.
Or you could donate manpower.
Right. You could donate, yeah, your labor, you know, that kind of a thing. And then, you know, when the project's over, you know, whatever's left gets redistributed or refunded back to whoever, you know, did the contributing. Right. So if there's money left over at the end of the thing, sometimes, believe it or not, and we make fun of them often here on Free Talk Live, sometimes the government program will have money left over at the end of the thing, whatever the thing is. And generally what they will do is they will use that money to find a reason to keep their organization going.
Right.
Instead of just being like, we're done with the one thing we set out to do. You know, there's some money left over. Let's refund, you know, whoever pitched in or give it back to the people. But that doesn't happen. But that, like, I feel like these things would happen. We would see a resurgence of what I'm going to call spontaneous organizations, right? Mm-hmm. Something like a bunch of labor firms or even like temp work or a construction consortium or several of them where people can and do accomplish these things voluntarily. So, again, just the example of the bridge goes down, something like a GoFundMe goes up. Some, you know, organizations are tabbed for doing the work. And then once the goal is met, the work is to go ahead, do it, do the work. And then once the work's done, you know, see where they're at. And then everybody disbands and goes on back to whatever they were doing before. If you hired some people, they still have their business. They've got other clients. They're busy, right? You know, you just become another client, you know, for these organizations, these construction workers. So,
and one thing I'd like to point out. So let's say, hypothetically, maybe it is in fact the most efficient system that we as a group own this, that, or the other road. Okay, well, as Greg from Intercoin will point out, this already exists.
Yeah.
Like, here's this building, here are these apartments. All of these are equally owned by everyone who's doing this.
Right.
Like, it is a collectively owned property. It's just a voluntarily collectively owned property, which is a very reasonable way to accomplish roads.
Yeah, and like, it scales.
Right. Here's all these people. Like, we all need this road, so we all have a share in this road so that it's that much easier for us to throw together, okay, well, we need to patch that pothole. Everyone put 50 cents in. Why? Because, well, it's our road.
Yeah.
Oh, turns out we've got, you know, $10,000 left after this. Okay, what are we going to do with that? Well, let's vote on it and figure out whether we're going to, oh, well, I think we should add this bridge here, or no, I kind of want my 50 cents back.
Yeah, small towns are an interesting microcosm of large cities because you can see what does and doesn't scale. For example, Here in Keene, New Hampshire, there's been a move to replace the standard parking meter, right? That is 1 meter at one parking spot in the downtown area. And they're replacing that instead with many meters with one kiosk.
Mm.
Right, so
wow.
there's going to be a kiosk now that you have to walk, you know, I don't know, several spaces away from where you're at max, and then go and, you know, put in your debit card or enter some money somehow, scan a QR code, all that kind of stuff, and pay for your parking. Now imagine if the government was gone, you as a business no longer had to pay taxes. For your business, for the property your business is in, or, you know, if you're leasing, then the owner of that property also doesn't have to pay that tax. And then you and the rest of the businesses on your particular street all get together and are like, hey, so we've already got this road. We need to figure out how to maintain it. You know, Billy here, my assistant manager, has got a good idea. Well, I'll just throw in, you know, X amount of money into this GoFundMe, and then every year we'll evaluate what needs to be done. Now, do we want to charge people for parking, or do we want parking to be free? And they're going to find out real quickly that it's more beneficial for them as businesses to have free parking than to make people pay.
Right.
Because if people are forced to pay for parking, why would they want to park at your business?
Right. Now, on top of which, so I believe parking in downtown areas would become free in the absence of government. And also, the reduction of the cost for maintaining the roads compared to what they were previously paying in taxes is huge. It's ginormous. It's gigantic. I can't even invent a new portmanteau to tell you how huge of a reduction in cost that's going to be to businesses.
Real big, big.
Huge. It'll be huge. Yeah. And so then now businesses are free to put that money back into their products and services, or figuring out, you know, how to get more people to their businesses. Perhaps they'll get together and build a big parking lot. You know, we don't know what's possible until government gets the FCC out of the way.
But they'll never get the FCC out of the way because they don't want to. They want to stifle innovation. Yeah. They're too afraid of innovation. They're the control freaks, yeah, after all.
And one thing I'd like to point out is that everyone who's worried about companies getting violent, government is the one that can get violent without losing customers.
Absolutely.
They're the only ones that can do that. Anyone else gets violent, other people go, ooh, you subscribe to that service? I won't work with you.
603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. Stay tuned. More is coming up.
Eleutheromania, the insatiable desire for freedom.
Filibuster, holy stink.
It's the new three-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app, or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Yes, welcome back. Thank you for tuning in and listening. It's Free Talk Live. The telephone number, if you would like to join us, 603-283-6160. Again, 603-283-6160. In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass, joining me,
Riley,
and Peakless Mountaineer.
We haven't even begun really talking about any of our show prep yet. I do want to maybe spend another minute or so talking about Iran and their drone bombing of Israel, just because it's breaking news. Like,
yep.
I mean, like an hour before I headed to the studio, like something popped up, like breaking news: Iran is suicide drone bombing Israel.
I'm, oh,
like,
boy!
Like, it is literally the most important thing happening in the world right now.
But before we go on, Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency made for spending. You can pay your bills with Dash at spritz.finance. Plus, they can send dollars to your bank if you still need those for something. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and easy to use Dash. You can learn more at dash.org. That's dash.org.
Before we move on, I'd like to promote the 420 event coming up next Saturday at the Concord State House, the New Hampshire State House in Concord. At 4:20.
I was going to say, what time is it?
Yeah, 4:20 on 4:20. We're going to hold a cannabis freedom rally, and everyone who is listening is invited to come partake in that experience. Whether you partake cannabis or not, come join us for cannabis freedom rally.
If you're in or near New Hampshire, that is, come from Maine, come from Massachusetts, come from Vermont, come from anywhere you can, and support this, because it's a good idea. Like,
you absurd radicals and your theory that a human can just own like a part of a plant without government assistance.
We don't need your permission, parasites. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we're
I mean, what's next? Do you think you can just like choose what kind of medical treatments you get?
I believe I should be able to.
Or you can like, you know, make your own decisions about how to spend all of the money you earn. We've got a lot to talk about, but first let's go to Bobby, I think, in Florida. Is that right, Bobby?
Oh, yeah, man. Just hitting the bowl, man.
I mean, go ahead, but the 420 rally is not till next Saturday.
He's starting early.
What's on your mind, Bobby?
Hey, Captain Kickass. I've really been enjoying your shows tonight. And, yeah, they got the Iran and Israel. And I'm pretty sure I talked to you before, Captain Kickass,
sure,
because I used to call Ian and Mark all the time, especially when they're like in the heyday, man. I know, you know, you're back in listening in and before you moved from Seattle to New Hampshire, because that was, you know, that takes balls to do that, dude. I really look up to somebody that has the balls to get down there. That's a big move. That's all the way across the country. And so, you know, it does encourage other people, because, you know, as I see it right now, the Free State Project's not really doing that great, you know, because they got a big hit, you know, with Ian going to jail and Aria and everybody, and having somebody like you to step in and actually, you know, do what you believe, your principles, somebody else that can actually do and lead like Ian, kind of, you know, and I know, you know, you're not Ian, but you know, you took the step, you did what you had to do, you know? And so, at least it's somebody to look up to, because the Free State Project, would you agree, has taken a hit, you know, the past, you know, year?
I mean, like, they didn't reach their goal, right? Their goal was to get, I mean, they did reach their goal as far as signers, right? They got enough people. They wanted 20,000 people to sign up to make the move. But we did not get, or they did not get the 20,000 people to actually move. They triggered the move, and they got somewhere around maybe 25-30%, right? So, like, we don't have an official tally.
Well, maybe. So that's the problem. You're talking about a group that really doesn't like being on lists.
Right.
For pretty obvious reasons.
Right.
And there's really no telling how many people just very quietly moved, you know, especially up into the North Country where they don't really deal with that many people, but here they are.
Yeah, if we're talking official statistics, like, I did not sign. I did not sign up for the Free State Project. I just moved here because I thought, there's a freedom movement going on in New Hampshire. I got to go.
Right.
Right. I didn't sign. I was just like, I'm going to go. Right. I got the opportunity. And so here I am. So, Bobby, I don't know. Was there a question in there somewhere? Did we cover?
Because, listen, here's the fun thing. I signed Free State Project thing 13 years ago. And I've been trying to get to New Hampshire for 13 years. I've been bumping and grinding. And so you didn't sign it. Here's the thing. And but you moved there.
Yeah.
I signed it. And I'm still working on moving there. Ain't that crazy? You know, so I think a lot of that has happened. And there's people in the Twitch chat asking when Aria's coming back. She's coming back, I think, December time.
So we don't have anything official. I don't have an update on that as of yet. I have a message out to her, and I haven't heard back from her. In a few days. The last I heard, everything was still on track for her to be out by the, we're going to call it the end of May, right? So June 1, right, is sort of our projected date for her to be released. I don't know, you know, what kind of timing, you know, how much time is she going to need to readjust to get herself settled back into regular life before she returns to the show? These are the questions that still remain. But last I spoke to her, her intent was indeed to come back, do the show. And so, you know, we can hear her firsthand recounting of all of the crap that she's had to endure while inside a federal facility, not to mention all of the dirt about the trial that hasn't been revealed to us because, well, we're not privy to all of that. Once she is released and out, we can start to hear some of that.
Yeah, the problem is the Bureau of Prisons, like the rest of government, is capricious and unpredictable. They will give you this amount of sentencing with no intention of ever actually having you serve that. Might be all of that. They might even, you know, keep you there a little longer just because. Yeah. But most people, they let out earlier if they're well-behaved.
Yeah, so that was according to Aria. That was her last projection that she told me. She gave me three different scenarios. Like, if these two things happen, then I'll get out on this date. If these things happen, then I'll get out on this date. And if none of these things happen, then I'll get out at, like, June 1st or something like that, right? So I don't, you know, the messaging system that somehow she got me approved to communicate with her in the prison system, like, it doesn't save your messages. So, like, I actually went back to look at that information, and the message is gone. It just, like, it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Oh, wow, that's crazy. They get to do that, but we can't.
Right.
We got to save everything.
Apparently. Yeah, if you need to be in contact with someone who's in prison, you might want to get some KY jelly first, because the Corelinx system is not
horrible.
Friendly.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah. Anyway, Bobby?
I can't wait to hear your guys' commentary on Iraq and Iran and you know, Israel and everything that's going on. So I'll call back later, you know, maybe tomorrow, maybe next week. I love talking. Listen, you guys are doing a great job.
Before you go, Bobby, are you, like, I realize you're trying to get up here, are you putting a little bit of money away in some cryptocurrency?
Yes.
I'm putting away
about 5% of what I'm getting. Into crypto, not much, but I, you know, it's a little bit.
There you go.
Yep.
All right. Good. Then I look forward to seeing you.
Hey, Bobby, thanks for the call, man. We appreciate you. Hope to hear from you again. 603-283-6160 is the telephone number.
I can't let someone who's trying to save up to get some more freedom not be fully aware that the effective way of doing that is with cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, this is this thing that doubles in value every year. So, yeah, if you are trying to save money, there is no alternative.
Yeah, it's certainly the number one instrument for increasing your wealth.
Plus, there are plenty of places here to spend it.
There is that.
And that's nice, because there are local people.
There could be a lot more. I don't know about plenty, but there are some, which is better than, like, I lived in Seattle, Washington, the tech hub of the West Coast outside of, like, you know, the Bay Area of Frisco or something like that, right? And in 2019, when I left to come here, the Seattle area had one Bitcoin ATM. Mm. One. I get here, and there was, like, 15.
Yeah, I mean, he was asking about, you know, what we thought about the Free State Project taking a hit with Ian getting arrested and everything. And the biggest thing that I noticed was just the total evaporation of our cryptocurrency market. Like, there were so many businesses, there were ATMs.
Ian was definitely a huge proponent of cryptocurrency, and it's going to be really hard for us to get that back going again, because he knew a lot about it, and he was...
Well, and
principled and knowledgeable enough to promote it.
And everyone just got scared. Like, there were so many things that, like, it was just posted QR codes that they accepted cryptocurrency for this, that, and the other. Yep. And they just took those down.
Yep.
Just quietly took down the QR codes.
Yeah, no, I noticed that.
They were so worried that they would get wrapped up in whatever it was. Oh, unlicensed money transmission? Is that what you're calling it now?
Right.
That, yeah. Now, the weird thing is, like, a lot of them still take cryptocurrency. They're just quiet about it.
Yeah.
But that is not good for a trade system.
Well, so the tech will defeat the fear, right? I don't know how yet, but it will. Likely because people will be put in a situation where they have no choice. right? Where like, you know, they're trying to do something. They're trying to have, I don't know, a garage sale, right? They're trying to do, you know, they put something on Craigslist, right? You know, I'm trying to sell my guitar and that kind of thing. And, you know, they don't want it to be tracked. They don't want it to be traced. They don't want it to be looked after or looked for by the powers that be, a.k.a. government. And so the people themselves will find a way. We already know that cryptocurrency has value and there's a huge market for it because there's thousands now, thousands of cryptocurrencies. They're not just Bitcoin anymore.
Right, and right. There's more of a competition in the marketplace, and that's the beautiful thing about this crypto revolution.
Yes, and one thing that it is doing is scaring the establishment, which it should.
Oh, yeah.
They should be very afraid because this technology not only can replace money, that is the value exchange between humans or organizations for goods and services, it can also replace government in its entirety because it can do all of the things that people have traditionally relied on government to do.
Yeah, all of the organization that we want from a central area, we can actually do in a decentralized fashion.
Right. You want record keeping? Who owns what plot of land? That can all be done on the blockchain.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to be done by a centralized, bureaucratic, violent organization that steals money from everybody else, takes a hefty chunk off the top for themselves, and then contracts the work out to some employees.
No.
That doesn't need to happen anymore. It can all be done on the blockchain.
Yeah.
You want to get married and make an official record of it? It's already happened.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a bunch of marriages that are, you know, they're on the blockchain.
You just put it on the blockchain so people understand that this is an agreement.
Yeah, yep. You want a particular set of people to make a collective decision on, like, okay, who's going to serve in what office?
Right.
Put it on the blockchain. It's easy to do.
You want
to? That's one of the things that Intercoin specializes in is voting oriented cryptocurrency systems.
You want a certificate of authentication. You're a collectible guy. You collect, I don't know, superhero action figures, rare, still in the box, right? That kind of thing. You want a certificate of authenticity that it is indeed an official product of this particular thing, this comic book or whatever it is, right? NFTs already exist.
Yeah.
Right. NFTs can and like already are becoming these certificates of authenticity. Baseball cards, for example, right? You can still have the physical baseball card in a hermetically sealed thing to keep it from, you know, degrading over time, exposed to air and all that kind of stuff. But then you also have the corresponding certificate of authenticity up on the blockchain that is linked to that card.
Right.
So like if you sell it, and then the other guy also gets, not only gets the card, but gets mm-hmm. the certificate, and it's all recorded on the blockchain. So eliminating the need for these bureaucratic silos that people have traditionally looked to government for.
Yeah, and I forget the exact word for it, but there's this word for like who has owned a piece of art. Like, yeah. Okay, you own this art, but who owned it before you, who did they get it from, so on and so forth. And the great thing about it is that, like, so with a certificate of authenticity, well, how do you know that that's authentic?
Right.
Well, it looks authentic. Well, that's pretty easy to fake. Whereas if you have a non-fungible token, NFT, for that certificate, then you know for a fact, here is the time that that was created.
Right.
And here is, if you then sell that action figure or that baseball card or whatever,
yep.
Okay, well, you would also transfer the NFT. And it's like, okay, well, you've had this baseball card for this long. They had this baseball card before you.
Right.
They got it at this point, and it's all kept free of charge?
It's kind
of
like most people, when they go to buy a car, they ask for the Carfax, right? Because this is like a history of, has your car been into an accident, mm-hmm. you know? Has it been maintained? If so, where? What was done to it, right? It's this sort of history of your car. Well, the same thing can, like Carfax can just put all their stuff on the blockchain,
mm-hmm.
right? And they are a, you know, a voluntary organization, I guess, as much as they can. They are a corporation, but like, stuff like that no longer needs government.
Yeah.
Right. And we have all this record on a blockchain.
Yeah.
And it's existing in numerous locations. So it can be accessed by numerous people.
Mm-hmm. And there's no chance of it getting destroyed just because this system goes down or what have you. It's already everywhere.
Yep.
Yeah. And so this is the technology that is behind what is now a speculative asset. like, yeah, NFTs are, you know, going for crazy amounts of money and then losing all of their value and all of that. They're highly speculative. But the reason that they're interesting to begin with is because of the technology behind them and what it could be used for. But right now what we're doing is we have one big gang that will use force if you go against their version of events.
Yeah.
And that's how we do, like, oh, well, this is my car. Says who? Says the United States federal government. You right. want to mess with them? Well, no, I don't. Like, I know for a fact that I bought that, but if their record says that, I guess I'm SOL.
Right. So, using the car analogy, the title of your car is usually issued by your state, right? Mm-hmm. In the U.S. anyway. So, you know, you buy a car in New Hampshire, comes with a New Hampshire title. You buy your car in, you know, I don't know, Oklahoma, comes with an Oklahoma title. And if you move from Oklahoma to New Hampshire, you got to go to the, you know, the town clerk or whatever the bureaucratic office is. You've got to hand them your Oklahoma title. You got to fill out some paperwork, pay some money, and then wait for them to issue you by mail a title for your vehicle in New Hampshire. Why do you have to wait?
Because it's an inefficient system.
Bureaucracy, that's why. It's the same reason that there's still many states where you go in for your driver's license and you get the photo taken and everything, and they just give you like this black and white printout of what will eventually look like your license while you wait for it to show up in the mail in 2 to 6 weeks. The technology exists, people, for titles to be printed on demand on the spot. The technology exists, people, for driver's license to be printed on demand on the spot.
Yeah.
But, like, for whatever reason, bureaucracy is like, well, we can't do that.
Oh, I'll tell you the reason
we
exactly.
We can't do that.
No, I'll tell you exactly the reason. The reason is there are jobs at stake. There are a lot of jobs that are in this centrally planned
printing.
And
we can't hurt people's jobs, Captain. Do you really want to unemploy a bunch of people? How dare you?
That is the scary part of government, is that it is the largest employer in the U.S. right now.
Yeah. Well, obviously. And that's part of the point of gaining political power, is that you get to give all these cushy jobs to your favorite cronies. And they get to give a bunch of cushy jobs to their favorite cronies.
Yeah, if you are employed by government at this point in your career, at the point of you hearing my voice talking about this, do yourself a favor and start learning some new skills.
Yeah.
And that'll be really good for you, because working for a terrorist organization never turns out well for you.
Quite literally.
Yeah, and let's look at what the effects of this are. Here we are on the precipice of literally ending the human species. That's where we are.
Yeah.
Like, I can tell you, like, exactly how this can play out. Could. Not necessarily will, but could play out very simply like this. So, step one, America really likes Israel and has been ginning for war against Iran anyway for a real long time. It's
been
in their plan.
Oh, they've been using propaganda so much propaganda to spur on this war, if you will.
Yeah, so the next move that they're likely to make is very simply they're going to put a bunch of military equipment and important personnel in their property, on their embassies, on their military bases that are conveniently located in Israel.
Yeah.
But first,
so all of these great targets, in order to get to them, you have to bomb American soil, which means it triggers NATO.
Yes.
So every other country that is in the North Atlantic Trade Organization, all of them have to act as if you just bombed their sovereign soil.
I'm going to make a potential prediction. I could be wrong, but I'm going to predict that after this attack from Iran, Biden's going to issue some sanctions. But we all know how effective sanctions are. They don't work against the government. They work against the people.
How do we impose sanctions on Biden from speaking or even, you know?
Don't listen to him.
Turn
that's
off your television.
That's what I've done. I've imposed sanctions on politicians at large. I turn off the TV and the radio whenever they come on and are going to speak. I do the same with these debates. Like, there was some kind of a debate between somebody and someone that the Liberty community, like, thinks is a cool person or something, does some good podcast or something, I don't know. And they're like, oh, did you? And I'm like, I don't even know who these people are. No, I didn't watch.
Mm.
You know, because, like, it's not important to me to, like, I don't know, this weird, like, cheerleading thing goes on.
Yeah.
Right? Within the Liberty community. And I'm like, that's fine. Like, if you want to spend your time doing that, that's your choice. You go ahead and do that. I'm just going to spend my time doing stuff that, like, is going to be productive for me. To me, that's a non-productive task, is watching some people debate a thing, right? Yeah, I might learn something. I might learn a different perspective. You know, maybe I'm missing out on something. But, like, largely, these debates happen, and then they go away, and then nobody ever talks about them again, and they have no impact on anybody's life other than they took some time to watch a thing, they, you know, sang some praises on the social media, and then moved on.
Well, you could do both. So if and when I... So I don't watch debates. Yeah. Like, I don't care what your facial expressions were. I don't care what your posture was. I don't care what your eyes were up to. I don't need to put that much focus on what you were doing physically. What I care about is the ideas.
I think it makes more sense to care about the ideas put forth in that debate rather than the body language and
exactly.
the tone.
Exactly. So I don't need to watch it. I can just listen to it. And when I listen to a debate, I can be driving. I can be cleaning. I can be being productive in a whole number of ways.
Yeah.
And then I get to, you know, if there's a good idea that's worth knowing here, like, you know, because you have to challenge your own ideas.
Oh, absolutely.
Or you end up with bad ideas, or you end up with good ideas with no defense of
them.
Or
you become delusional.
Yeah. I mean, none of these are good outcomes. So it's good to listen to the opposite side. So it can definitely be valuable to listen to a debate while you're being productive.
So swinging back to the Iran... apparently launching ballistic missiles and drones. This is from the AP. Booms and sirens in Israel after Iran launches ballistic missiles and drones in an unprecedented attack. Booms and air raid sirens sounded in Jerusalem
unprecedented.
Early Sunday after Iran launched dozens of drones and ballistic missiles toward Israel in an unprecedented revenge mission that pushed the Middle East ever closer to a region-wide war. The attack marked the first time Iran has launched direct military assault on Israel, despite decades of enmity dating back to the country's 1979 Islamic Revolution. Condemnation was swift, with France saying that Iran has crossed a new threshold with regard to its destabilizing activities and is risking a potential military escalation. Britain called the attacks reckless. There was no immediate word from authorities on whether any explosions were an incoming attack. Air raid sirens were reported in numerous places, including northern Israel, southern Israel, the northern West Bank, and the Dead Sea near the Jordanian border. Israel's Megan David Adom Rescue Service said it was treating a 10-year-old boy in critical condition in the Bedouin area of the Arad region, but provided no details. So that's all I know for now.
And I'd like to point out this is a retaliation for what Israel has already done, and we'll talk about that after the break.
Stay tuned. More Free Talk Live is coming up. Hour number two is next.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of... where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project, and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live.
Dose is now underway on this Saturday night edition of Free Talk Live. In the studio tonight, it is myself, the captain,
Riley,
and Peakless Mountaineer.
I was thinking about on the drive over here, there's a bunch of songs with like Saturday in the title, right? There's like the Bay City Rollers, Saturday night, right? You know, that kind of thing. And then there's like, I think it's Elton John, who says the word Saturday like 8 times in a row.
Wow.
In every verse, right? It's like Saturday, 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 Saturday night's all right. Right? You know, and you're like,
well, it seems to be everybody's favorite day of the week.
It does.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad to be here. Thank you for listening. The telephone number, if you want to join us, 603-283-6160. Free Talk Live is brought to you by ForkFest, happening June 13th through June 16th at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. ForkFest is decentralized, so there is no ticket cost and no one is in charge. For more information and to connect with other attendees, you can visit the unofficial website, forkfest.party. That's forkfest.party.
And, of course, Saturday is the most popular day.
Well, I'm trying to remember the other songs now.
Think about it. Like, Sunday, maybe you go to church, maybe you don't, but you definitely know you got to work tomorrow.
And people are trying to get their brains back in the mindset of working tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And, like, anything that you, like, haven't done yet that you really need to get done but you don't have time to do during the week or that needs to be done while you're at work. Okay, well, I guess I better get that done today. You know, did I do the laundry? You know, did I mow the lawn? But Saturday, you got a whole nother day to do all that stuff. You can hang out today, and if you want to go drinking tonight, you can sober up tomorrow.
Yeah, that's true.
Sunday is a good day to rest and come back to the mindset of working. Well, Saturday, it's just a play day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like reading about people who have sort of escaped the job thing, right? These are people who have, you know, entrepreneurs or they're otherwise freelance, you know, to some extent, they actually work more than, you know, like an 8-to-5 person.
Some of them.
But they are free to prioritize and, you know, knock out their, you know, things to do, their to-do list.
During the week?
Well, according to their own priority and their own hours. Right. And this is a dream for many people. Many people will never achieve that dream. And I like that there is the ability to trade your labor for money. Right. And that will exist in a voluntary society. You know, government is abolished. Right. But will it be like the traditional 8-to-5 Monday through Friday? I don't think so.
Now, we're used to having 2 days of a weekend.
Right.
Now, that, historically speaking, is bizarre. Now, if you look back in history, one of the reasons that, like, for example, that people hated Jews is because they refused to work one day a week.
Hmm.
That was revolutionary thinking.
Why would that get them hated?
One whole day where you won't work for me? How dare you not do what I tell you to do for one whole day?
Yeah,
I want you reaping my grain and carrying my rocks.
Well,
okay, we got to exterminate these people. They're spending a whole day not doing what I tell them to.
Well, people existed in a lot of slavery mentalities.
Yes.
You got to, I own you, therefore I get to tell you what day you're going to take off now.
But one of the innovations that cannot happen until government is abolished, or at least severely reduced, is something like traffic congestion in big cities, right?
Mm.
All these businesses are open Monday through Friday 8-to-5, right? This, you know, corporate hours, right? Whether it's a tech company or a construction, it doesn't matter, right? All these businesses that are in these downtown areas of these big cities, they all operate between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. in whatever time zone they're in. These cities, the governments of these cities, do not incentivize anything outside of that structure.
Right.
Whereas in the absence of government, all of a sudden businesses would be self-incentivized to, have their hours not be 8 to 5, be, you know, 7 to 4, or some other different varying degree of like when people come into your headquarters to do their job, so that they can avoid the rush hour traffic, the traffic congestion that happens, you know, an hour or two before and an hour or two after this 8 to 5 period of time. Like, the solution is simple. You just got to prioritize the traffic or incentivize the people who are driving to and from to drive during not so standard hours.
Right.
That's the solution, but it can't be innovated until government gets out of the way.
Yeah, one of the issues of everyone paying for roads and everyone getting them for quote unquote free is that there's no effort put into figuring out who gets to use them when. Mm. So if I was running a road, it would be perfectly reasonable for me to say, like, I'm sorry, between this hour and this hour, you have to pay me twice as much if you're using my road. Hmm. There's too many cars on my road during these hours.
Right.
So if you want to add to that problem, you need to give me something extra. And then all of a sudden, you know, A, there's plenty of people who will like say, hey, employer, I'll be here at this time, but I'm paying extra to be on these roads at this time.
Right.
I need you to give me more money so that I can pay that guy to be here at the time you want me here. And then the employer can go, oh, well, actually, if you could show up an hour earlier and leave an hour later, that'd be great. All of these things that could happen, that could be explored,
right?
If they weren't in the static system of government,
right? The organization known as government disincentivizes innovation wherever it lives.
It has no imagination.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's not possible. Like, people have gone to work for government entities and been like, hey, I've got an idea. Like, wait a minute. We don't do that around here.
We got to go file that in triplicate in a form somewhere, and then we have to get approved by the bureaucracy at some point.
We don't just have ideas.
We can't just have ideas around here.
Well, and look at right now. Okay, so we discovered exactly how much of our commerce could be done over the internet. Why weren't we doing this beforehand? Oh, because there's no competition.
Right.
Because of the corporate structure, which is fundamentally a government creation.
It's so funny being involved in voice over IP telephone systems, right? And that gets into like what they call unified communications, which is just like your phones, your conferencing, your web meetings, right? All that kind of stuff. Being involved in that like before COVID and then during COVID, right? Because all of a sudden there was incentive for all of these companies to get on board with remote workers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so all of a sudden they need usernames, credentials, training, you know, best practices on how to conduct their business using these remote worker tools, basically an online telephone and a computer with some online meeting software. Right. These are the two basic things. Right. And so being involved in this stuff before, I had to earn the privilege. Right. I had to go to work for this company and work for, you know, like 6 years or something. And bust my ass and make sure that I was on top of my crap, and that you know, I showed that I was a trustworthy individual. And then when came time for my review, I was like, "Can I have a big ass raise?" And they're like, "No, but is there any other like intangible benefit?" And I'm like, "Yeah, how about give me my wings? You've already got, you know, a dozen people working remotely who are, you know, sort of senior type people. I'm like, I think I've proven that I can be trustworthy. I show up, I do my job, I keep my word, et cetera, and so on." And they're like, "Sure, done." And so then I moved, right?
That's a good way to move. You have trust in someone else, and you can demonstrate that you're perfectly capable of working remote.
But then COVID kicks in, right? And now all of a sudden, like, we got more business, right? Because, like, people are signing up left and right for these tools from the company that I work for. Right? And many other companies, too, right? There's a lot of companies that, like, actually increased their business footprint as a result of government's near declaration of martial law during COVID. Mm-hmm. Because now there was incentive for all of these people to work remotely. And so I got to participate on sort of the, I don't want to call it the gold rush, but like the massive influx of new customers that needed these tools to be able to conduct their businesses. And the whole time, like even before all of that, the whole time I'm thinking to myself, working from home is going to be the way of the future, right? The tech exists. I work in it, right? Like,
right.
I see it every day. I work with people who are working remotely 100% of the time, all of the time. There's one guy who, like, was in El Salvador. We had another guy who was in Chile, another guy in Mexico, right? You know, we had international people working for this company.
Mm-hmm.
And it all went well as long as you're responsible and you know the tech. Right, you had the right training. So now, somebody like me gets tabbed to like give best practices on working from home, how to set up your own, you know, work from home workspace. You know, no distractions. If you can, be in a separate room, close a door, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then also give training on the tech itself, on how to use it. And, you know, hey, you know, you got an email with your username and password, and you know, here's how you use the stuff. And you want to do a web conference, you do this, and it integrates with your email, et cetera, and so on. So my point is that the incentive existed for a mass amount of businesses to get on board with remote workforces.
When COVID happened.
Yes.
Yeah. And the incentive would, and this was my point, the incentive would have existed if there was competition.
Right.
It would have already existed. The fact that the government eliminated all the competition so that we have all of these zombie corporations running around not actually producing anything is why they didn't bother to update. They didn't have to compete with other companies that were being innovative.
Now, the good news is the tech scales.
Yeah.
It's easy to scale technology because we can either add more hard drive space, more power, more whatever, and we can expand the tech.
Mm-hmm.
We can't expand an office very easily. So it's nice that we have the internet to create remote work.
And I know there's been this sort of backlash. No, I don't want to, backlash isn't the right word. There's been this sort of some of these businesses have called for a return to the office.
Oh, yeah. Of course they do.
Right.
Like, for one thing, and this is not to be underestimated, people love power. And
they had
the power to create an environment and rule over their office with an iron fist or a velvety glove if they felt generous. But
and
either
they
way,
want to micromanage everything you do.
Yep, they could just pop into your office, peer over your shoulder, make you sweat. Plenty of fun for them, not so much fun for the employee.
Yeah.
And you would feel it. You would feel their physical presence as they stare at what you're doing.
Yeah.
Of course, the tyrants want that back.
Yeah.
You took away all their fun, all their power and control, and now they can say, oh, well, you're just not being as productive as when I was looking over your shoulder all the time.
Yeah, there's a term that a former boss of mine coined that's when you're in the office and you're doing work as opposed to working from home. Mm-hmm. When you work from home, the tasks are just right in front of you. Whether it's your phone ringing or, you know, a new email comes in or you got to finish up a project or you got to, you know, I don't know, you know, do a spreadsheet and, you know, give a presentation, whatever it is. The task is right in front of you all of the time. But when you're in an office setting, you are subjected to what my former boss calls drive-bys.
Yeah.
Right. And this is just somebody getting up from their desk, walking over and standing behind you until you acknowledge their presence to find out what the hell they want.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it like, it is a disruption
mm-hmm.
in your workflow. If you're prioritizing your work and, you know, you've given yourself X amount of time to complete these tasks, you know, with some kind of a buffer, hopefully you're, you know, if your project management skills are on par, you give yourself a buffer to make sure that because something's going to go wrong, Murphy's going to rear his ugly head and, you know, you're going to need some extra time to do something. But these drive-bys, if you will, like you can't account for those.
Right.
You can't plan for them. You can't a budget for them. You can't budget your time, that is, right? They just happen. And so it's an additional distraction from the tasks at hand mm-hmm. that you also have to manage when you're in the office.
And half the time, it's something where they want to put part of their workload onto you.
Right.
Hey, could you do this thing for me? And then you have a choice. You can either face confrontation and say, no, I'm sorry, I can't. Or you can be inefficient because that's not your job. That's not what you're specializing in. That's not what you're there for. And you're plenty busy as it is.
The next hurdle that I see for these companies that now have most, if not all, remote workers is there's regional barriers, right? There's literally political barriers to this. For example, if I work for a company based out of Seattle, Washington, and they go, sure, you can work remotely, I'm like, great. There's a caveat to that. Mm. Right? Because immediately you're like, I can work from anywhere. No, that's not true.
Mm. Oh.
I can only work from within the United States of America, nay, within the lower 48.
Oh, really?
Right?
Really? Wow. Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, so there's some security things with networking and VPNs and that kind of stuff. Some companies are pretty loose with their policies on working remotely. And they're like, yeah, we don't care. Just, you know, if you're going to be in Mexico, let us know. And we'll flip on the Mexico switch for your particular log onto the VPN to get onto the corporate network for the company you work for and access right. all the tools. Other places, though, are not. They are very like, nope, sorry. No, if you're outside this geographic area, there's nothing we're going to do for you.
Hmm.
Right. Or they'll even tell you they can't because it's against the corporate policy. Right. So we're forbidden to open the VPN to a foreign country. Right.
Huh.
Yeah.
So that's the great firewall of America, I guess.
Yeah. And Mexico didn't pay for it.
Of course not. Of course not.
So, yeah, there's this virtual political border thing that happens with remote workers. A lot of the reason people choose to work remotely is because they want to have more freedom. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to take advantage of arbitrage, right? So they make, like I did. Like, I was making a Seattle salary, and I moved to New Hampshire. Keene, New Hampshire. Cost of living, half.
Right.
As far as, like,
rent. And you're able to save a lot more money, right. I'm sure.
That's a big part of why, in the future, we're not going to have the centralized hub system that we have had so far.
Right.
Everything is moving to network instead of hub, which is a level of change that people have not even begun to grasp.
Now, maybe they're afraid of, like, just a mass exodus to, like, Mexico or something like that by U.S. remote workers. I know that there's already more people looking to expat or at least spend time, you know, whatever they need to. I'm trying to remember what the there's some caveats to, like, living in Mexico. Like, if you're gonna do it, you gotta have stay there for most of the year, but then you have to come back for some period of time, a period of weeks maybe or something like that, before you can return on your visitor's visa, that kind of stuff. You can only kind of purchase property there. You have to go through a bureaucratic process to I can't pronounce it. It's Fiadissimo, something like that. That you have to. It's a lot like starting your own LLC, right? There's a whole bunch of paperwork you got to fill out, and then basically this trust, this front company, buys the property, and then you lease it from them, and that's how you buy property in Mexico. You also can't buy on, like, the coast, right? They, you know, there's ways to do it, but it's going to cost you like three times the money. But the cost of living down there is still, like, reduced compared to the U.S.
So right? Why on earth are companies not letting you move to Mexico? Like, what's in it for them?
I really don't know.
Hmm.
Other than authoritarian control, I have no idea either.
Yeah, other than, like, oh, we can't have our all-employee Christmas meeting, right?
You good.
Know, like, who cares, man? You know? Yeah. Dear employers, first of all, stop buying pizza as a treat for your people. That's not a treat.
It's not.
Pizza's not a treat.
It's not.
You want to do something nice for your people?
Give them nutritious food, maybe.
Or throw some extra dollars on their paycheck, or hand them a gift card if you're worried about taxes. Right?
Well, no, the whole point of buying pizza is that it was cheap for us. We don't want to give you money. That's the one thing we don't want to do.
I'm
lucky that I actually worked for a company at one point that actually gave us nutritional food.
Nice.
That's amazing and rare.
Yeah. It got to a point, though, the last time that I was in the office environment, it got to a point where they would send out, like, an email to everybody. Hey, everybody, we're going to have this, you know, whatever it is, you know, Halloween, you know, we're going to celebrate Halloween on Friday at, you know, 3 p.m. We're buying food for everybody. If you have specific dietary needs, please reply to the HR person, right? So, like, you could be like, yeah, I'm on no carb carnivore. Can I get a steak? Right? Yeah, they'll bring you, like, a hamburger or something with a bun, you know. But like they will go out of their way to, like, make sure that you get something.
Yeah, I'm that one guy that it backfires on them, because what they're trying to do, they're trying to give you feelings. They want you to feel a certain way. Mostly, they want you to feel as if this thing that is not your bloody family is a family. Because, you know, your family is the thing that that you work for free for.
Yes.
And that's what they want. Yes.
It's the most annoying thing about having worked for many companies, right? I've worked for many startups or even restarts, depending on how you want to look at these things. Venture capital funded, private capital funded companies that, you know, were in the red, and then we had to get into the black before we could be sold and then absorbed by another, this kind of a thing. So it creates opportunities, right? And I love that. I love that, like, if you found a deficiency in how the business was being run and you brought it to somebody's attention, they'd be like, great, you're in charge of that now. Mm. And so now you get a whole different role. You can change a career, right, just by having an idea of how to improve things. So I love that about it. But what I didn't like was all of these companies have to come up with these mission statements, right? Mm-hmm. And they all say the same thing. Yep. They're worded slightly differently, but exactly what you said. They're like, well, we don't consider ourselves a company. We consider ourselves a family.
And that's a red flag when they call themselves your family.
It really is.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's,
and I am one of those guys that it backfires when they do pizza because I'm gluten intolerant. So that means you forgot. Because I've told you, I tell all of my employers, you know, the ones that care about, you know, giving food to their employees. Because there are some of them that are reasonably enough don't
care
about
that. But come on, Pickles, you could just scrape all the toppings off and eat it like that, right?
No. No.
Big bowl of pizza toppings?
I could, and probably wouldn't, probably still get some crust in there in the process. But no, that's gross.
Yeah. All right.
Now, when we come back, though, I would actually like to continue the discussion on Israel and Iran.
I was going to say, I was going to mention something that you wanted to come back to before we moved on, but we're about to, well, we'll come back to that.
Yeah, I can cover pretty simply, though, that all of this is a response to the bombing of the Iranian embassy in Syria. So for anyone who missed that part of this story, that is why this is occurring.
Who bombed the embassy?
Israel.
In Syria.
Israel bombed the Israeli consulate, I believe it was. Yeah, it was
Israel bombed the Iranian consulate.
I remember that.
The Iranian consulate in Syria.
Okay.
That's why this is happening.
603-283-6160. Still to come. More on the Iran bombings. Plus, why should anyone feel bad for FBI agents? It's Free Talk Live. Stay tuned.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash, digital cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? You can live your life on Dash instead, with some handy websites. Bitrefill.com has been accepting Dash for years and has a ton of big-name retailers and brands, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Plus, many of their gift cards are available at a discount. But what about paying your bills? Spritz.finance can do that, and they can send dollars to your bank account in case you still need those for some reason. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
It is Free Talk Live. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for tuning in and listening to our radio program. If you're unaware of who we are and what we do, visit freetalklive.com. In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass, joining me.
Riley.
And Peakless Mountaineer.
So you wanted to
I wanted to do some projections here on
Let's do a comeback.
All right.
All right, we're
comeback. I've been here the whole time.
We're circling back to something we talked about in the first hour.
Indeed.
And that was...
the Iran-Israel conflict.
All right.
Which there didn't used to be an Iran-Israel conflict, like, what, a week ago?
Like a day ago, even.
Well, that's not exactly true.
You mentioned the bit about What, Israel bombed the Iranian
embassy. Yeah. It was consulate, embassy, whatever.
Okay.
Same difference. They all sound the same or act the same to me. Yeah. I don't know the difference.
Yeah. And
consulbacy.
Consulbacy.
Yes, there
we go. Emsulate.
Emsulate. Judges? The judges aren't here today.
Seems like imbecilic, but imbecilic.
Anyway, so Israel took out their, you know, their little location within their gangland territory.
Right.
And so now...
Well, in Syria. So that's the fun thing about consulates and embassies. Oh, it was Iranian soil. It just happened to be in Syria at the time. Which is part of my like probable projection for the next move, because America's been ginning for this war forever. They were really, it's one of the things they were pissed at Trump about, is that they had it set up. They were ready to go to war with Iran over this. What did they do? Shoot down one of our toys?
Yeah, pretty much.
And he's like, wait a second.
This is such a good idea after all. No,
he asked, wait a second, how many people is this going to kill? Well, I don't know. Do you want me to find out? Yeah, go ahead and find out.
Remember, ladies and gentlemen, that was at the beginning of 2020 when the COVID mania began.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is a big part of why COVID mania began. Like, they need to spend dollars. They need to spend more and more and more dollars. So they need reasons to spend more and more dollars. Otherwise, you realize how much they're stealing from you. So since we weren't going to be ginning up a new war, we had to do something. So it was really convenient for both China and America to do this, because China had the Hong Kong riots to deal with. Hong Kong was like demanding that they have, you know, political rights because they had economic rights. And apparently that's how that works. You get enough economic freedom, you start demanding political freedom. And yeah. Anyway, so Trump asked a very human question. How many people will this drone strike kill? And of course, they didn't know immediately, because that's not what the military does. No. Okay, so they found out, looks like about 100 people for, you know, shooting down one of your toys.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that didn't seem like a measured response. Holy crap. Anyway, so fast forward to today.
Okay.
Now the U.S. is trying to get back into war with Iran via Israel. So I still think the way that they're going to do that is a bunch of this embassy consulate nonsense, or they'll build a bunch of like new American military bases that just so happen to be right next to every valuable military target in Israel. Whatever way floats their boat to make sure that, we did not attack Iran. Iran attacked us.
It's right. The way the military industrial complex funds itself. They sell the American people a war.
Yeah.
They sell it to you as though we actually need this stupid war to save a certain group of people.
Yeah. Because Iran is such a threat to us. Really, it is. And so one way or another, the U.S. is going to get into this war. It might be a nice slow drip, drip, drip. We do a proxy war kind of thing. But sooner or later, America gets in on the Israeli side. And then Russia gets in on the Iranian side because they're close allies. Sooner or later, one way or the other, Israel will get enough American backing to push back on Iran. And then Iran will need Russia to get their backing. And Iran, of course, and Russia's backing will, of course, be officially or unofficially at the time from China.
Hmm.
Like, a big part of Chinese manufacturing base is currently going into the Russian military industrial complex right now, just so they can maintain the proxy war that exists in Ukraine. So, great. Great. Now we're going to have all of NATO against Iran, and Iran, of course, will have Russia unofficially or officially, probably officially pretty quick, as its ally.
Yeah.
And then China will unofficially or officially be Russia's ally. And congratulations, folks, we're in World War III, and we can just pray to whatever deity might accept our prayers that they just keep it from going nuclear so that we don't literally end the species by kicking so much dust above the clouds that it never rains back down.
It one of the things that bothers me about religions as organizations is that the people who subscribe to these religions frequently get manipulated by politicians.
Of course they do. Especially using the politicians that hold to that religion.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they use that religion as a way to hornswoggle you to gain your support for said war. Whereas, if they just had to come out with, like, logical reasons to go to war, there wouldn't be any, and people would be like, no, let's not do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But that doesn't happen. Instead, people get used by the system because of their beliefs, their religious beliefs.
Yeah.
And that is one of the things that bothers me the most. I'm not saying that, as a man who formerly claimed atheism and now claims agnosticism, right, just because I don't know enough to tell you whether or not your deity is the one or
I actually agree with that. Like, right? I don't have enough, like, but...
I haven't done enough study, but what I am saying is that, let's just say that you're right, we'll just make sure that your beliefs don't get you manipulated into killing a bunch of innocent people.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, like, at the root of this is a religious war.
Oh, yeah. They always are.
There's pseudo-religious. We've had pseudo-religious wars. Like, look at Vietnam.
Oh, and I remember, Bush, too, going, this is a holy war, or whatever it was he said. And I'm like, come on, dude.
He called it a crusade.
Well, the Christians in the United States are all about George Bush, and they were all about claiming Islam is a huge threat. They're going to bring Sharia law to America. We got to go fight the Muslims.
God told me that we should mobilize the U.S. military. And I'm like, no. God didn't tell you that.
No.
I'm sure he believes that. I wouldn't put it past someone to have appeared to tell him as if it were God.
I'm actually sure that he doesn't, and that in fact it was one of his advisors who told him to say that in order to get support.
I wouldn't put it past him having actually had a religious experience about how deeply important it is that he has these forever wars. Would not surprise me. But one thing that I just wanted to point out is, like, we lost at Vietnam. And that was something that's like a religion, communism.
Yep.
This is a religion. You think we're going to win? You think that this is ever going to end with human beings intact? It's not going to. There's a third of the planet that worships Islam.
Yeah, I mean, not as long as politicians are the ones doing the supposed intermediaries, right? Like, they're not there to try and solve this. Right. They're there to try and make this thing go. They want this thing to kick off.
Right.
Right. They don't want peace. They don't want people to figure out how to cooperate with each other.
Heaven forbid people cooperate. We can't have people cooperating. They might overthrow
their differences of opinion and belief. Right. You know.
And that's one of the things where, like, within Islam, you have peaceful Muslims and you have warlike Muslims. Yeah. And the more we do this nonsense, the bigger a microphone we hand to the warlike Muslims.
Yeah. And the same goes for Christians, too. Yep. There are definitely warlike Christians.
100%.
More of them than, like, I even care
really
to admit.
They're fundamentalist people that think the end of the world is coming and Jesus is going to crush their enemies.
Yeah.
They want Jesus to crush their enemies.
Yeah, that's the worst part about this is that they not only think that it's coming, they want the apocalypse.
Oh, of course they do. They want to be front and center promoting the apocalypse because they believe that they are the chosen ones.
All right, it is Free Talk Live. We're a live call-in show. We've got some people holding right now. Let's go over here to, I believe this is David Ridley of the Ridley Report. You're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah, I have an update on a subject that is near and dear to your heart, and that is Ian Freeman's incarceration.
Ooh, do tell.
Please give us the update.
So it's not quite such an update on what happened to him as what happened to me when I tried to communicate with him.
Oh.
So I sent him a letter about a month ago,
mm-hmm.
And it came back yesterday or day before, roughly. And so when I mailed it to him, I didn't just write his name. I wrote Ian Freeman, and I had a stamp on the envelope that had the word freedom on it.
Mm-hmm.
So after Ian Freeman, I wrote Ian Freeman, who deserves and then I pointed an arrow to the stamp. All right. Right? So the letter came back a month later, and it said, writing on outside of envelope, which is not address, is not allowed.
They do not acknowledge that anyone there deserves freedom.
Yeah, Bonnie actually ran into that early on when she sent the letter, and like on the back of the envelope, just as she was sealing it, she drew a little heart on the back of the envelope.
And why shouldn't she be allowed to? It's her husband.
And they sent it back. They were same thing, David. Same thing happened.
So the way I look at this, I was not angry or sad when I got it back, because Ian, he doesn't need a letter all that badly. He's getting letters. But what he does need is publicity. And I'm always looking for any excuse to publicize my concerns about the arrest of Ian Freeman.
Yes.
Over cryptocurrency. So that gave me a chance to, you know, remind 170,000 of your listeners about the injustices being done to your former host.
Yeah. And it still goes on. For those of you who don't know, Ian has finally been taken into a federal facility. He's down in Massachusetts now, according to my information. Or if he's not there today, he will be there shortly.
Massachusetts, huh?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. I believe he will be in the same facility that Arya's in, but never shall their paths cross. For at least according to what I've been told from Bonnie at this point. So
that figures.
We have lost. We were able to communicate with Ian before they moved him to the federal facility. Because he was kept at a county facility, they're a little more loose with things like phone time and letters and visitation and that kind of stuff.
They were able to give him a tablet.
Yeah, that's gone now, so we're going to have to adjust to not communicating with him as frequently. But the good news is, you know, he's still alive, he's still kicking, he's still as active as he can be, considering his situation. And so we hope for the best. What else did you have, David?
That is all.
Hey, thanks for the call. How can people find out more about you and what you do?
RiddleyReport.com.
Right,
I love when he does that. It's so
David
Ridley,
everybody. Yeah. He's a good egg. I like that guy.
He is. He's a good man.
Moving right along, let's go over here to, I believe this is Ricky from the Commonwealth.
Ricky,
you're on Free Talk Live.
Thank you there, Brother Captain. Brother Riley, Pequot's Mountaineer, good evening.
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 Well, I got to think back a little bit. Now, speaking of Brother Ian, that's what brings me to said phone call. It was around September of last year. I made a phone call into the show, and I said, you know, we're having a tough time. I said, first of all, this stuff on the border is just a distraction. We're having a tough time. We're trying, but we're having a tough time facilitating a good war, because you got things like the BRICS alliance, you got NATO. Now, mind you, I called this, in my words, because I said we've been playing around with this thing for, what, 65-odd years or whatever. One of these days, this thing's going to pop, and I'm saying Israel. I called it the mother of all wars. Now, little did I know this little stunt was going to happen with Iran and the Palestinians. Now, mind you, my point of view is not going to be very popular with the Christians of this world, where, you know, I can understand this, you know. But now Netanyahu, he's a real joker, because this was a strategic hit on those officials. See, he's just grabbing at straws and dragging us through it now. He knows that we talked our big talk. This is all about words. We don't have any tangible reason to back Israel for anything. We'd love to have our money back. We'd love to have our nukes. You see, we lost control of the Middle East when Saudi Arabia and Egypt joined the BRICS alliance. Now, that's when I, that Thursday, came up with my doomsday predictions that me and Richie are having this bet. But I said it was weeks before when I said about the mother of all wars. Little did I know this would happen, and I'm very upset. This is not going to be good. This is, and it's all BS.
Oh, I mean, of course
it is. You know what we should do, Captain? You know what we really should do? First of all, it's a little late now.
Disband NATO.
Biden already.
That'd be a good idea.
Abolish government?
Well, yes. It's a little late now because Biden already said, oh, you know what? We're going to defend Israel. Boom. Now Israel takes their move. And you know what the bad thing is? This was a massive drone strike. This is unusual. Okay? This has got bad written all over it. You know, we should just say, you know what? It's all PR. You know, you're right on that. When I was hearing that, it's all PR, and it's all to beckon to the Christians for votes. But the reality is we should say, let's get the hell far away from Israel. Now, Iran already said, they said, you know what? We're not intending to hit any United States targets. Now, that's their way of saying, stay the hell out of our war. What do you think we're going to do, Captain?
What do you mean by we? Like, I'm going to do nothing.
Yeah, you keep saying we lost control of the Middle East. Like, okay, so first off, no one had control of the Middle East.
I don't control the Middle East. I'm not interested in even supporting the Middle East.
But here's one thing.
Second off, even if the U.S. had had control of the Middle East, we're not the U.S. I'm not, you're not, Riley's not, Captain's not.
All right, I agree with that. I agree with that. But when I say we, regardless of the fact that all the people on this phone call agree with that, our government is the one's going to make us pay.
It's
with
not
my
government.
Predictions.
It's not my government, though,
Ricky. You can say that, but when the missiles fly, it ain't going to matter.
You're right in that, but it's still not my government.
Well, now, when you say pay, do you mean like pay the bill, or do you mean like the fact that they are threatening human life on Earth?
Well, I mean, with my doomsday predictions, as far as that I'm sure you remember very well, we're going to pay and get killed by our own dollar. Mm. You know, that's what that's hinging on, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact of the matter is it figures. But see, we, you know, it's the government. And it's the same in any country around the world. It isn't the people. It's the governments. But the people will suffer. We will suffer because of the sins of our government.
Yes, yep. Our owners are going to do whatever the hell they want, and we're not going to be able to do anything about it except for continue on our march towards freedom and the abolition of this organization of violence that literally ends people's lives.
A good example of this is as I said, I would say to Israel, I'm going to walk away from you. We have no reason to have any involvement with you anymore. This is not a strategic military location anymore. That's gone.
Yep.
So we're going to part our ways. No, here comes good old Uncle Joe. We're going to defend Israel. And I understand the PRBS. You know, but
Ricky,
we would say something different.
Ricky, can you name me a high level politician in America that does not back Israel? No,
well,
you can't. There isn't one on either party.
Well, wasn't Barack Obama very standoffish against Israel?
No.
He founded Israel through slush funds. Come on.
Yeah, no, Barack Obama supported Israel exactly as much as George W. Bush did before him. Exactly as much.
This is much worse. This is worse than it was before as a strategic military situation. The fact of the matter is that's gone. This is all religion to pander to Christians in this country for votes.
Yeah.
Because we're the largest block of voters. We got to pander.
Well, I would say no. I mean, I would say let's roll with the punches. And I think in this case, I think that people are just going to suck it up. And I mean, we could spin things any way we want, you know, but nobody's willing to take the chance that the Christians in this country will say, oh, you know what? It's okay, guys. We understand.
Yeah, there. You know? I mean, we can look to the past for what's going to happen in the future when it comes to what the animal known as the state is going to do, government, right? That's what I mean by the people, you know, calling themselves governments, are going to fearmonger people into supporting armed conflict.
That's what they do best.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I'll tell you, and I can't I can't say this more times than I can now, and that's all the state is for all the people listening that don't understand it. All the state is a strong arm extension of the federal government, plain and simple. And it's something that people shouldn't forget.
I'm totally confused. I don't know what you mean by the difference between the state and the federal government.
I'm saying the state is a strong arm extension of the federal government.
They're one and the same,
though. Where's the confusion?
Well, so
if I say that I am an extension of myself, that doesn't make any sense, Ricky.
Because they are one and the same, and the Fed loves to hide behind the state. That's how it operates.
The Fed is the state. Are you talking about like the United States as different entities from the Federal Reserve? Because the common term for government is state. They practice statecraft. They practice statism at the federal level.
That's what I'm referring to. The state is an entity unto itself. I mean, I know here in Pennsylvania how that operates. Now, the state is very foreign here, more or less, but it's very obvious when they play their games. What the state will do is infiltrate county organizations and things like that. And it'll use, with individuals, it'll use fear and intimidation tactics.
Mafia tactics.
What I call the state.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things, I mean, if we're going to talk about how this is structured, is that there are a bunch of things that appear to be subsidiaries of the United States federal government, but in fact are exactly what the United States federal government answers to. Mm. And the top two on my list...
Federal Reserve,
and the intelligence apparatus.
Which is non-intelligence.
Yeah, like the CIA is kind of the, like, you know, the go-to on this one, but it's way bigger than that. Yeah. It's the spy apparatus.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, once they've, you know, knocked off your leader, you know who the real boss is. So in 1963, we know for a fact, at that point, the CIA was in charge of the United States of America.
Which, by the way, because I just remembered it, the FISA thing has been renewed, for those of you who missed that.
And let me guess, they didn't do the one thing that would have been nice where they, like, require a warrant to spy on Americans?
Yeah, no, they didn't do that.
And in fact,
renewed until 2026.
And it was like a landslide win, bipartisans, everybody, all Democrats and a bunch of Republicans voted for it. I don't know about all, but like enough Democrats and Republicans all voted for it. There was a minority of people who opposed it, and the thing just went through. So if you were hoping that the United States government was no longer going to spy on its citizens, thanks for the call, Ricky, spy on its citizens, you are wrong. They're going to continue to do so. They love doing it. And so now you are the terrorist.
Congratulations, Mr. and Miss America.
And heaven help you if you rely on a judge for that power.
603-283-6160, hour number 3 of Free Talk Live, still to come. Gardner Goldsmith, yeah. The folks who do Monday, Tuesday, and Friday night editions of programming for us. A shout out to those guys. They're doing great work. Their content is good. I've been listening to their stuff, and I'm really enjoying it. So hopefully you are too. Just a reminder that Free Talk Live is a live call-in talk radio program 4 nights a week now. We are call-in live on Saturday, tonight, tomorrow, Sunday, and then again on Wednesday and Thursday.
So we're here to cover the weekend for you and make sure you get up to date on all the craziness in the world if you really want to consider keeping you up to date. But we also get you through the midweek with all the craziness in the world, too.
Yeah. And before we go on, tonight's amplifier is David Burns. We want to say thank you to David Burns.
Thank you, David.
Who is a platinum level amplifier.
Ooh.
That means he gives 25
bucks, I think it is.
25 yeah. bucks a month to this program. Why would somebody give us $25 per month, do you suppose?
Because they value freedom of speech. They value what we, the messages we talk about here on Free Talk Live, which is about liberty, peace, and economics, and freedom, free minds, and free markets.
And Free Talk Live is the only nationally syndicated talk radio program that comes from the perspective of liberty.
All sounds good to me.
Yeah.
So if you would like to help us get on more radio stations, you can visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com. It's a Patreon type of a setup. We only ask for $5. That's the silver level. There's different levels there, you know, silver, gold, platinum, that kind of a thing. You get some benefits for contributing to the AMPS program to help us get on more radio stations. We're currently on somewhere around 200. We could be on 250, 300 radio stations. Not out of the question. Please consider becoming an amplifier over at amps.freetalklive.com. Thank you again, David Burns. We appreciate you and your support.
Tell you one reason I would be amplifying is I see this as a canary in the coal mine. It's not the only one, but I
yeah,
mean,
it's definitely a big one.
And if we're gearing up for World War III, which honestly is what this looks like to me, then what tends to happen during world wars from previous experience is that they clamp down on all sources
want,
of information.
They don't want dissenters, Peakless. They don't want dissenters to speak the truth of the situation. They want the propaganda mm-hmm. to spread across the nation so they can promote their war and promote the boys and girls overseas. Johnny has to be marching home soon. We're going to go defeat the enemy with Johnny, and he'll be coming marching home. He'll come marching home in triumph.
And the one thing that they cannot stand above anything else, it's not just that someone speaks out against them. It's that they see who agrees with them. I mean, this is why they pulled dislikes off of YouTube and YouTube
right.
comments.
Yeah.
Because they do not want you to see that other people think that something is bad.
I have a question for both of you. Riley, you go first. What is your least favorite sub-organization in government? So, like, if government is just, you know, the label we give all governments, then what is your most hated or, like, least favorite organization within the government?
I would say the Social Security Administration, because they incentivize poverty. And what I mean by that is, if you're on SSI, you cannot make or save over $2,000 in your bank account, because if you do, they take away your benefits,
right?
And you're no longer allowed to receive their benefits because you have too many resources.
Interesting.
And to me, that's just so unethical, because if I'm a working man and I'm still getting some benefit from the government, whether they want to reduce it or not to a few dollars here and there, fine. But the moment you say that I cannot save money,
right,
and you disincentivize saving money so I don't have to worry about your stupid system, is the moment I say I'm parting ways with you. I want nothing to do with you as an institution.
All right. Peakless, what is your least favorite sub-organization?
Oh, well, that's easy. CIA.
Creeps in action.
Oh, yeah. And look, so here's my thing. Like, every time someone proposes some way of reforming government, like, oh, we need to change the term limits or some nonsense, I point out how, like, that's not actually going to change anything of substance.
No, it's really not.
It's just going to adapt. And, like, look, I get it. Let's say that I can wave my magic wand. Boom. No more CIA. I know. They're just going to replace every single one of those functions. But the continued existence of the Central Intelligence Agency is an affront to human dignity. We know for a fact that they did these unbelievable, terrible things to everyone all of the time. We know for a fact that they take out leaders around the world. We know that they did mind control ultra programming on unsuspecting civilians, where they used LSD to try and create mind control assassins. And they're still there.
And They've infected people with diseases. Like the black people were infected with I don't remember what the disease was.
Yeah, the Tuskegee Institute. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like and just
syphilis.
Yes. Yeah.
They were infecting people with syphilis.
Yes, intentionally syphilis. Intentional people.
Infection with syphilis.
During Prohibition, government poisoned beer and wine and booze and stuff like that. So it's not beyond them to do that. Guess what my least favorite organization is?
The FBI.
The FBI.
Was it that obvious?
It's because of context.
Okay.
And I mean, fair enough, because like at least the CIA has to pretend that they're not doing anything to me personally. The FBI, on the other hand, that's their job.
I had intended to just basically rip on NPR. I had a couple of articles from them. We're not going to get to them. So we're going to get to this one, though. We're going to talk about it. The headline: many FBI agents are struggling to make ends meet.
Oh, yay! poor people. I love it.
Wonderful. Right.
Housing costs are to blame. Huh. That's the second sentence
So it's almost like if you print a bajillion zillion dollars, like your own torturers might get upset with you.
Hey, so you know the debt clock, right?
Yeah.
It's 35.
Oh, is it up to 35 now?
But almost.
It was at least 34.
35 what though?
Man, 33 was like no time at all.
Trillion?
Just like 33 trillion to 40 to 34
how
trillion.
How long is it until we have to start making up new terms like bazillion or bagillion or whatever?
At this rate, it's going to be pretty quickly. Like, I know here in New Hampshire, there was a piece of legislation put forward saying, hey, if the debt gets to $40 trillion, it's time to leave the United States. Of course, it didn't pass because we can't leave the United States. After all, it's dangerous. All right.
Well, and partly because I listened to the arguments on that bill. Mm. They all know that there's absolutely zero chance. And frankly, you can put any number you like there.
Yeah.
They know that there is zero chance whatsoever of the United States not getting whatever number in debt. Now, what's interesting right now is that we're reaching the point where no longer is the military our largest expense. Now, it's just the interest on the existing debt.
All right, so I want to get into this. Many FBI agents based in cities with a high cost of living are struggling to make ends meet, forcing them to make hours-long commutes or double up in apartments, according to Bureau and Justice Department officials.
Good.
Good.
I feel so. Let's you mean they have
make
to
them hard, make it harder
have,
for them to
they
do
have
their
to
job.
Live like everybody else does since government decided to flood the market with bazillions of dollars?
Mm-hmm. Now they get to feel what it's like to be a plebe.
Well, and let's be real specific on this. The reason that housing in particular costs go through the goddamn roof is because they are bribing homeowners. Who are those homeowners? Well, they are the boomers, the largest voting bloc in America. They all owned their own home because they got to buy it on the cheap. So this is the way that the government gets to bribe every single one of them without looking like it's bribing them. And then they go, yep, my home just ought to go up in value, even though it's, you know, more run down than it was last year.
Natalie Barra, president of the FBI Agents Association, whatever that is, said she's heard from two or three agents sharing an apartment near New York City and others who commute 4 hours each day back and forth to their field offices. Cry me a frickin' river.
Yeah.
Some circumstances are even more extreme, she added. They're having to juggle between being able to afford rent and or utilities versus being able to actually buy groceries. So it's getting to a level where it's becoming very, very difficult to not only recruit agents into these high cost of living areas.
Thank God.
But also to retain them in those areas, said Barra, who is a second generation FBI agent. That's even more disturbing.
That is a little scary. You know, maybe they'll solve this problem by subsidizing the FBI even more.
I feel no pity at all for these bastards.
I hear you.
A survey last year found more than two-thirds of agents who live in these places said it's difficult to manage on their current salaries.
Aww. Aww. Poor people.
How about you get some actual skills and provide a real product or service?
Yeah, how about making the world better instead of worse?
The Agents Association is pressing for a housing allowance to support those workers who pay steep rent or mortgages because they live in New York, Newark, Honolulu, San Diego, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Boston, Miami, Seattle, and Washington, D.C. They're asking for $165 million.
And they're going to get it, too.
To be included in the Justice Department's 2025 budget to pay for a pilot program. FBI officials have been looking into the problem since 2021.
Huh. Wow. Imagine that.
It's taken them, it's taken them three years to look into it.
Well,
it does take a little while.
Government efficiency, it's a thing. Yeah.
No, it isn't.
Well, I mean, this is what happens when you have a bureaucracy. And just real quick, while we're on that subject, I mean, I hear so many people like, well, they wouldn't allow Bitcoin to exist if it was a real threat. It's like, they're not gods. They have a bureaucracy. Do you have any idea how inefficient that kind of a system is? It's not like they can control the earth.
Yeah, no, that's true. Comparing government compensation scales against the poverty line and analyzing how other federal agencies and private sector employees pay their workers is what they were looking into. There are multiple stressors that folks experience, says Caroline Otto, assistant director of the FBI's Resource Planning Office. Hey, guess what, Caroline Otto? If you were really doing your job, which is planning resources for FBI agents, yeah, they wouldn't even have this problem.
Yep.
We have heard very compelling and heart-wrenching stories across the workforce in these areas. Heart-wrenching stories from FBI agents who can't afford rent.
I have no pity for you, FBI. The FBI is a terrorist organization. It is the biggest distributor of child pornography on the planet, and you expect me to have pity for them? No. Thank you.
FBI agents have little say in where they are placed once they graduate from the academy. What's more, agents usually come to the Bureau as a second career, and they often take a pay cut to start. Horse hockey. I mean, sure, they don't have say in where they go, but, like, I mean, people go, they might come to the Bureau as a second career after the military.
Right.
Or after being in the police force.
Right.
Or after being in some other bureaucratic government environment.
Well, it's a totally different job.
In New York, for example, starting salaries for FBI agents hover around $73,000 per year.
Oh boo friggin' who. So your starting salary is above the national average. Mm-hmm. Huh. Wouldn't you know? Oh, and fun fact, so when you're an FBI agent and you pay for a home, you don't have to worry about the FBI kicking down your door.
Right.
Huh. You get ain't that something?
Free land, essentially. Well, maybe not free land, but you don't have to be molested at any point by police. You get a special pass, and you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, these are the people. Like, everything that they get added service. When they use a computer, they don't have to worry about the FBI getting on them about what they search for because they got curious about this, that, or the other. When I use a computer, I have to worry about that. When anyone else uses a computer, they have to censor their own thoughts of what they want to learn because they know for a fact that it's going to be monitored, and they know that there is that risk that whether or not they were ever going to do anything to anybody ever, they just might get their door kicked down.
So in New York, the starting salary is $73,000. According to this article, the next part of this is very deja vu-ish because before I moved here in 2019, there was a study done on Seattle, Washington, and what you needed to make in order to afford like a house or a family of four, that kind of stuff. Listen to this. A nonprofit group from in the city of New York reported that people need to earn at least $100,000 to afford food, housing, and transportation there. That number reaches $150,000 to cover a family of four. Right. So this is old news.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is old news. This has been around for 4 years, as near as I can tell. These numbers, these types of studies. And so just now, NPR is publishing an article about, oh, the poor FBI agents.
We can't allow the thug class to go without. That's for everyone else to do.
So,
you've
Riley,
got to worry about starvation, not our thugs.
It sounded like you were trying to say something a minute ago.
I just want to say that you know, if people want to have pity for the FBI for being poor, they need to realize that the FBI is making nearly $80,000 a month. Or is that a year? I forget which. But they're making a ton of money.
Per year, yeah.
Oh, per year. Well, they're still making a ton of money. For what? Harming you. Yes. Locking you in a cage.
Yeah. For enforcing unconstitutional rules for those who do believe in the idea of like, well, we have this agreement and that's why we... No. No. None of them follow that. None of them have ever followed that. And if you ever want to, like, oh, find out whether what they're doing was constitutional, you better be able to afford a lawyer. Because our system is specifically set up so that they can do whatever they want up until a judge tells them to stop that one thing. And then they'll keep doing that to everyone else.
So listen to this. Representatives from the Agents Association have met with leaders at the FBI and the Justice Department to raise their concerns. Okay, so if I'm working for any other organization besides government and I'm having this problem, do I have representatives from, you know, the Fast Food Workers Association meet with leaders at the Justice Department to raise my concerns?
Nope.
No.
I don't get that privilege.
Huh.
Weird. The FBI says it needs both additional funding and authority from Congress.
My authority.
To pursue a housing allowance. Can we have an allowance? Can we take more money from everybody else and give it to us so we can afford expensive homes?
But the FBI has to keep us safe, Captain. Don't you understand?
Well, right.
And let's just look at what they're proposing. Mm-hmm. Okay. So where's that money going to come from? Oh, they're going to print it. Now, you might be saying to yourself, they'll just tax us more. That's not how it works.
Well, by printing it, they are sort of vicariously taxing us.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So they're going to print more money so that the FBI can afford to have houses. So then there's going to be even more money in circulation. So then rent has to go up.
Right, to account for the inflation.
Yeah. It's almost like this doesn't actually solve the problem.
We are looking for a more permanent, sustainable solution for all individuals with these high-cost field offices, said Otto. At the Justice Department, Assistant Attorney General for Administration Jolene Loria said officials are aware of financial challenges that federal workers face in the field, not just FBI employees, but across other parts of the DOJ as well. The Justice Department is supportive of innovative efforts undertaken by the FBI. When has the FBI innovated anything?
Never. They're always working off the backs of the other people who have innovated, and they're just adopting the things that we have done as their free market slaves.
Well, see, what we do is we arrest people who made new stuff, and then we make them make that stuff for us, and that's called innovating.
They're also working across its components to identify achievable and sustainable strategies that support our people in the field, Loria said. The department is ready and willing to work with Congress on more permanent solutions. And I bet you not a one of them includes abolishment.
Right?
No.
Abolishment, reduction of the whole FBI apparatus.
Could you imagine
a monetary shift, you know, things that would actually cause lasting change.
Could you imagine them putting in their policies that we are going to reduce their force by 5-10% every year? No, they want to increase their budgets, increase their numbers in order to control the populace. They want to promote themselves as the good guys. Come be a hero for us.
Yeah, here's an idea. Maybe you wouldn't need so many agents if you were only enforcing crimes that had victims.
Yeah.
I know.
Or just reduce the number of crimes that you enforce that have no victims by 5%.
Yeah.
How many fewer agents will you need if you just slightly reduce the unnecessary tyranny?
They're not going to do that, though, Peekless, because they want to be the total totalitarian controllers of our lives. They won't admit it to us, but they do. They want to be the beautiful arm of the state. They're going to be the heroes. And the American people are going to buy it hook, line, and sinker time and time again. It doesn't matter who's in power. someone's going to buy it.
I guarantee you there are people reading this article, and it's making them all choked up.
Oh yeah,
even our beloved police are suffering agents. Under this economy, just like me. They're just like us.
It's not clear whether a majority in the closely divided House of Representatives will support any FBI housing allowance. Former President Donald Trump, the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party, has targeted the FBI workforce with steady criticism for years. I mean,
he still wants to build them a new building, doesn't he?
Yeah, he sure does.
I've targeted them with steady criticism for years, and I've had probably more of an effect than Donald Trump has.
I mean, they targeted him with a good deal more than criticism, and he's still on their side.
He is. He's just pretending not to be. To get voters, of course.
This next sentence is the last sentence in this article, and it's weird. It says, and at a, in quotes, weaponization of government, unquote, event, right? At a weaponization of government event at the conservative-leaning Heritage Foundation this week, there were new calls to defund the Bureau.
Amen.
Defund it all.
603-283-6160 is the phone number if you'd like to join us tonight.
Wasn't it always a weapon? Isn't that what government is?
It's a bit of an oxymoron.
It's a gun.
More Free Talk Live is coming up. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. Thank you for tuning in. It is the final half hour of Free Talk Live on this Saturday night. In the studio, it's myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass, joining me.
Riley.
And Peakless Mountaineer.
Hey, I just want to tell you guys, I've been great tonight. I mean, you guys have been great tonight. Sorry. I've enjoyed having you guys on.
Of course, you guys have been so much fun. I love doing Free Talk Live on a Saturday night. It's so much fun.
Well, I just want to say for the record, I'm not actively planning a mutiny right now.
well, good, because there's very few captains around here.
I'm the captain of myself. Thank you very much.
Ah, there we go. Very well. Very well. Well said. I wish more people would come around to the ways of self-captainship.
Me too.
Yeah, that really is the problem fundamentally, is that no one wants to take responsibility for their own lives. They want to outsource that to other people. And it turns out that the only people who want that job are monsters.
And psychopaths. Yeah. But I repeat myself.
Yeah. If they weren't addicted to power, they wouldn't want yours. Because, power is a burden. Like, don't kid yourself. Even power over your own life means you have to be responsible for those choices. And that's a burden. But if you don't bear that, this is what happens. We start playing with the death of all mankind, which is something that we should have never started poking at in the first place.
I never be your beast of burden. I got a Rolling Stones song stuck in my head.
There you go.
Happens.
And then I'm trying to remember, somebody covered it too. It was one of these, old classic R&B style singers. Anyway.
I did want to bring up at some point during this show that, since we have been talking about cryptocurrency and alternative currencies and all that sort of thing, that Zimbabwe is trying the gold-backed dollar.
I read something about that.
I've heard that, too.
My first thought was, are they going to Gaddafi him?
Yeah,
right? It sounds like Zimbabwe is asking for a little freedom interjection.
Well,
Team America coming your way.
Wouldn't that be too obvious, though, if they Gaddafi'd him?
Well, I mean, so one of two things is likely to happen
us,
now.
Maybe, but...
Yeah. Well, let's call it three things. There's one of three things that is very likely to happen. Right. Number one, it will just so happen to be that they were Iran's secret ally the whole time.
Huh.
And now that we're in war with Iran, we need to be at war with them. Two, they might just have, you know, an internal coup overthrowing that, like, oh, it's totally organic and completely grassroots, sure, and not a color revolution that is the CIA's doing it all. Or three, they might just do what governments tend to do with things like gold-backed currencies and be so mind-bendingly corrupt with it that it just collapses immediately on its own.
Hmm.
Those are the three likely things to happen.
Did you get any sense of why they're doing this now?
Well, yeah. I mean, don't we have it here somewhere? Like the
What is it?
Zimbabwe. I forget if it's $1 trillion.
Oh, yeah, it's up on the board over there. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, yeah.
$1 trillion yeah. is a can Zimbabwe
imagine,
note.
Wait, can you imagine having a $1 trillion note in American currency? That's preposterous. That's insane.
Is Zimbabwe the country where they just like they just took some zeros off the ends of everything?
That's Venezuela. You'll
have to be more specific.
That's Venezuela.
Of the currency.
You are probably thinking of Venezuela.
Yeah.
Whereas in Zimbabwe, they just roll with it.
Like
what are we, a billion?
It would be like the 100 being the new 10 here in the U.S.
Yep.
Oh, million's not buying anymore. Let's go with billion.
The 20 is the new $2 bill.
Oh, wow. Could you imagine the craziness of it all?
Oh, we don't have to imagine. It's the reality of the situation.
Yes,
because
but here's the thing. If they eliminate cash, no one's going to notice too much. Unless...
I figure.
The account... Well, if the account numbers in their bank account do not change, they're not going to notice if bills start disappearing.
Mm.
There is something to be said for the disappearance of the physical tracking of your finances. I'm talking about analog stuff, right? So if you're under 30, none of this will make any sense to you unless you really paid attention to your mom and grandpa. But in order to balance your checkbook, well, first of all, you had to have a checkbook.
Yep.
Which many people don't have those anymore.
Once upon a time.
And then you had
people took pieces of paper and did their own accounting.
Yeah, you had to write down like what you spent or, you know, keep a copy of the check and then later on, because you didn't know, there was no instant, there was no internet, there was no phone to tell you how much you got left in your bank account. You had to figure it out for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So if you deposited $1,000 in your bank account and you started writing checks all over the place, well, it's your responsibility to not overdraw, right? And this is where banks would come in with overdraft penalties and all that kind of stuff. So, and that used to be a manual analog experience for everybody that had a checkbook. So something you had to do to avoid overdrafts and fees and, you know, otherwise getting in trouble with your bank and getting your account shut down and all that kind of crap. That has gone away now because now it's just an app on your phone.
Yep, you can just pull up your bank account and say, okay.
You can just look and be like, oh, it's up to the minute. Like, I just spent, you know, $12 on lunch and, oh, I can see it right there. Look, $12 at the restaurant, whatever, right? You can see it instantaneously and immediately, and it does all of the accounting for you. And that's great. But it certainly allows people to be less on purpose about their finances. And, you know, I don't know, hopefully
it's
can
the same,
overcome that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same kind of, it's why they use chips at casinos, is because people don't think of them as money.
Mm-hmm.
People are less cautious when they swipe their card than when they actually hand over bills.
Huh.
Because, like, it's easy to associate, oh, well, I had to do a thing to get this bill. So every time that passes out of your hand, your brain actually kind of pays attention. And it's like, did I need to do this? Okay, yeah, go ahead then. No, don't do that. Don't spend that 20. But if you're just swiping a card, I mean, do you even notice what the numbers were on the thing?
Right.
No, you just kind of trust that it's a good enough price that if it was too crazy, someone would have said something.
Yeah, or you don't even have to like hand over a card now. You can just like QR scan or you can tap.
Yep.
Right? Have you seen these?
Yeah.
These are...
Yeah, you don't even have to know that there are numbers involved. You just tap.
Yeah. Yeah, you
it
can
just
be...
makes it easy for us to take your money from you.
Yeah.
You can be one of the... you know, 1 in 5 people in the United States who graduate from high school and are functionally illiterate and not have to do any accounting at all.
Does that mean 4 out of 5 people are functionally literate?
Graduates.
Graduates.
Yes.
That means 4 out of 5 graduates are functionally literate, which is, I mean, pretty decent, but we're still missing 20% of the population.
Yeah, 20% is high, right? And we're talking about the public school system, too. So, like, I'm not really surprised. But that number hasn't changed, to my knowledge. It's been 1 in 5 for 5 years, maybe longer.
Well, public school was initiated because it was dropping toward 90%. That's why they did public schooling, to make sure all the kids learned how to read, because we were getting close to 90% literacy rate.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, just think about it. Like, when you try and read something like the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, I mean, it's not a different language, but it's complex.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to read because of its complexity.
It's like reading Shakespeare.
Right.
Yeah.
That's just how humans used to think in this country.
Right.
Right, with complexity,
yeah.
With a lot of thought. Now we don't.
Yeah.
And because our minds have been sculpted by this nonsense. Now, one of the things I wanted to point out with the Zimbabwe Gold,
yeah.
Or ZIG, as it's Zim Gold, as they're titling it. Yeah.
I'm thinking of
capital
rolling.
Z, little I, capital G.
I'm thinking of rolling paper, zigzags.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Right. One of the things is that Zimbabweans have 21 days to turn in the current set of money.
Oh.
Uh-huh. And, I mean, we were talking about the... about going cashless, right?
Yeah.
That if they were going to institute it, you know, snap of the finger style, like, oh, well, now that we're at war with Russia, China, then we got to do this and this. So everyone turn in your cash so that we have more complete control over the economic system. We don't want them to print fake cash. Don't you know? That's our job. So everyone turn in their cash so that we can have these, or for that matter, if they switch over from having these, you know, independent banks to having, you know, what is currently just the FedNow system, the central bank digital currency system.
Yeah.
And if they do this the fast and, like, you know, upsetting way, it'll be something like this, where they say, okay, you have this period of time to turn in all of this money for what we have decided will be money for you.
I just wish that the regular people, you know, in our listening audience, even people who maybe are for the first time hearing this show, would just look at what a scam money actually is.
Yeah.
Government money, that is, right? That it literally is somebody just like, it's like Monopoly. Somebody busted out this Monopoly money and was like, this is real currency. Start using this.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody went, okay.
We'll just start using these magical papers with numbers written on them as money. And we do. We go along with it.
And it literally is the boiling frog syndrome in action, right? So the U.S. dollar used to be gold-backed.
Right? Back in the day. Yeah.
Used to be. And that was how it was. That was how the people were like, no, we're not going to have any of this fake money that all these other places have, like the British Empire had, you know, all that kind of thing. No, we're going to have something that is backed by a hard valuable. That's going to be gold.
Mm-hmm.
This is called the gold standard.
Yeah.
And for a while, it was good. It worked. It was just fine. And then one day, they were like, we can't wage war with this money back.
Right. It's hard for us to create credit and debt and things like that with
gold. We can't tax people enough to pay for the largesse of war that we actually want to wage, so we're going to have to decouple our money.
Yeah, I mean, it's
from the gold standard.
It's the same scam that has been played since it was just goldsmiths with a vault.
Right.
Where, okay, I have X amount of gold, but instead of just having X amount of paper gold that's redeemable, I'll make twice as much or 10 times as much, and eventually you have a run on the bank.
Yeah.
And that would happen occasionally in America. You'd have all of these independent banks, and every now and again, one of them would get caught doing this fractional reserve nonsense, and you'd have, you know, a little kerfluffle, and all of the other banks would take over their share of the market. And the government, well, we can't do that. No, we will step in and everyone will go to one bank, the American Government Bank.
Right.
And we would never print more dollars than we have gold because we're the central bank. We're the central government. We wouldn't do that. We're the good people.
And then they did.
And of course they did. Obviously. What else was going to happen?
Hey, did you guys know that something actually did get raptured during the eclipse?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the value of your money.
Oh, yeah, it's very true, isn't it? It's becoming less and less value. Valuable.
Well,
gold and silver are reaching different highs. Like, well, gold's at $2,400 an ounce, last I checked.
Gold's at an all-time high.
And currently in price discovery, so we don't know where it's going to stop. That's the fun part. Like, we have no previous action to compare it to now.
It's a misnomer to say that gold rose to an all-time high, because what really happened is the dollar fell to an all-time low,
right,
requiring more of them to purchase the same amount of gold.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
if I had 10 pounds of gold 20 years ago, and it, I don't know, what would that have been in dollars at that time, approximately, if we're at an all-time high, so... I don't know.
It's not on... I don't know how many ounces are in a pound, sorry.
The same...
There are 12 troy ounces
It was worth, $200, just for easy math, right?
All right.
I like easy math for
analogies.
Hypotheticals.
Yeah, hypotheticals, yeah. So 10 pounds of gold worth $200 20 years ago,
okay,
and that gold now is worth $20,000, right? Has it become worth more? No. It's the same chunk of gold. It's only worth whatever I can trade it for, right? It's that the dollars in the system have increased to such a capacity that it requires more of them to purchase that same 20 pounds of gold.
Yeah, fun fact. So a few years ago, Bitcoin hit about $69,000.
Yes.
And recently it hit $73,000.
Yes.
However, adjusted for inflation, it still hasn't hit a new all-time high. Because in that short period of time, they so devalued the U.S. dollar that it still hasn't gotten to a new all-time high in inflation-adjusted dollars.
And guess what, ladies and gentlemen of the audience or our listeners? They're going to do it again.
Yeah.
Of course they are.
They have no choice. They can only, the only lever that they can pull is to print more.
Yeah.
And they're going to find a way to keep this scam going as long as they can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And at least the people who save their money in gold are doing so in something that the government doesn't create as much of as they want. But I'll tell you this much. It's really hard to spend. I mean, every year I get more and more opportunities to spend Bitcoin and more spendable things like Dash.
Yeah.
But every year I get the same amount of opportunities to spend gold. I get Porkfest.
Right.
I get my community, because most of us will still take gold, even now that it's more valuable. We will still take it for our goods and services.
We will accept it in forms like gold backs.
Yeah.
Right.
But, like, I can't send it anywhere. I can't use it for online commerce. I can't go to anywhere to spend the darn stuff. Whereas, at least with cryptocurrency, I find more and more places to spend it.
Yep.
So, I mean, pick your poison.
Yeah. With gold, of course, the eventual problem becomes weight.
Yeah.
Right? Because gold is heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And so something like the gold back is, in my mind, a game changer with regards to, you know, spendability and that kind of thing. The problem, of course, is that inflation again, right?
Well, and so even with making it something that's portable in the way that a gold back is and divisible in the way that a gold back is, you still have the problem of we're in a digital age. I can't shove it into my computer and have it come out the other side.
Yeah.
So and even if it's easy to transport gold, you still got to do it.
Well, I think it's a matter of time and we will see a gold backed crypto, like a token, something like that, something on.
But you still have that counterparty risk.
You do.
So depending on who's running it, and this is how I know Zimbabwe is going to fail instead of becoming the world reserve currency, is because they don't have a trustworthy government. I mean, not that governments are trustworthy anyway, but they're not exactly at the top of the pack. So I know that they're not going to back this completely. They're going to print more than they have. They're going to loan out and move around and all of the shenanigans with the gold that backs it, so that eventually, at some point, enough people are going to go to the Zimbabwean government and say, we would like the actual gold for this currency, that they have to, as Nixon put it, temporarily suspend the gold window.
Temporarily suspend, yeah.
And this
and it's
is
still suspended today.
Yeah, and this is the same reason that gold is, in my opinion, very unlikely to return to its former prominence, is just because that counterparty risk is a killer. Whereas with cryptocurrencies, some of them at least, there is no counterparty risk. It simply cannot be spent if you do not have it, and it's not backed by something that you traded into. It is the thing itself.
Yeah, I was just looking up. There is an article from MarketWatch that talks about a little bit about the ZIG. The headline reads, Zimbabwe's new gold-backed currency, the ZIG, is on a roll. And they hold up one of those. We have one, a Zimbabwe currency, a bill, tacked to a wall here in the studio.
It's a trillion notes. I don't know what it's denominated.
It launched Monday at $13.56 to the U.S. dollar.
Wow.
So one of these Zigs is worth $13.56, or was as of Monday.
There you go.
Well,
and for as long as they can actively maintain at least the perception that they will redeem this for actual gold, then yeah, it's going to perform amazingly against the dollar. Yep. Because the dollar is not worth the paper it's printed on, and everyone knows that they keep printing more and more and more and more of it. Where at least if it's partially backed even, that at least forms some barrier of them printing it into oblivion.
Right. Even gold backs just a couple of years ago were $3.70 or something like that.
Yeah.
And now they're over $5.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I saw that yesterday on the exchange rate. And it's like, wow.
Yeah. So, like, people, like, this is happening. We're not just sitting here spouting nonsense. You know, it's not like we haven't looked into this. It's not like we haven't been tracking this. Right, the stuff is really actually happening. My fear for Zimbabwe, of course, is there's a reason that there are no other gold-backed currencies for other governments on planet Earth right now.
Yeah, wasn't the last one Gaddafi that tried to do that?
Yeah, and what happened to him?
I seem to remember a bayonet being pushed where you do not want a bayonet pushed.
Yeah.
Because there was, I'm sure, a completely organic and grassroots coup that had nothing to do with American interference whatsoever.
Of course not. America does not interfere in such things. We're just the good guys.
Yeah, they wouldn't interfere in the private politics of other countries. That's what Russia and China do. You know, the bad guys.
In March, the country, Zimbabwe, recorded an annual inflation of 55%. From over 47% in February, spurred on by their former local dollar that all but collapsed. The real-time gross settlement dollar, RTGS, that was launched in 2019. Reliance on U.S. dollars also hampered the former currency. So their former currency was hampered by being tied to the dollar in some way.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't surprise me.
I fear for who's the leader of Zimbabwe? I don't know. Let's see.
Couldn't tell you offhand. Yeah, but yeah, no, yeah. I definitely, good luck not having a freedom invasion, guys, because that is what America does literally every time. But like I said, they might screw it up themselves before America figures out how to overthrow them.
Yeah, or like stage a coup.
Yeah.
Replace it with a, you know, more U.S. oil-friendly.
And the thing is,
pharma-friendly.
The reward for just screwing it up yourself is so huge that they're very likely to do that. Because this is the problem with backing a currency. You have to trust the backer.
Yeah.
And no one's trustworthy. That's why I like Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Don't trust.
Yeah, it is.
Verify.
Yeah, it is
I
trustless.
Agree. Yep.
You do not have to trust the third party. Like, it's hard enough to, like, do voluntary exchanges and trust the person you're exchanging with.
Right.
You know, you're buying a used car from some guy on Craigslist. You're like, you know, you do your best. You take it for a spin. You bring your mechanic friend along or whatever it is, right? You take, you know, some steps to, like, you know, mitigate the lack of trust that's inherent. But the last thing you need is to have more parties you can't trust involved in your transaction.
Right. And trust is the exact problem that currency is solving.
Yeah.
If I knew you well enough to trust you, we wouldn't need money between us because I'd be keeping mental track of, like, okay, well, I did this for you, but you never got me back. That's the natural human thing to do. If I could trust you, we wouldn't need money.
Right.
So now we need trust in order to have money? That's crazy. But, you know, good luck, Zimbabwe. I mean, congratulations. You are now the best government currency on the face of the earth.
For now.
Yeah.
If they can maintain
hope that
it.
Doesn't hurt you.
And, like, from a cryptocurrency perspective, this might give, you know, governments who would otherwise attack people trying to peacefully exchange in crypto, it might give these governments a different target for a minute.
Yep.
You know?
I don't know. And that might be why they're getting away with it so far, is that at least there's some competition that isn't them.
We are out of time. Thank you again, Riley. Thank you again, Peakless Mountaineer, for joining me this evening. This has been Free Talk Live. If you missed any part of tonight's program, you could go find the archives over at freetalklive.com under the resources tab. Thanks and peace.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.